You're listening to Paul Allison's podcast.
Weblogs, wikis, and weblogs.
I'm a teacher at Eastside Community High School and a tech liaison for the New York City Writing Project.
Dreams that you dare to dream really do.
Weblogs, wikis, and feeds is a podcast where we're looking for a home online like Dorothy. And instead of being afraid of weblogs, wikis, and feeds, we've learned that to teach with technology, we have to use our minds well, like the Scarecrow. Our hearts, like the Tin Man's, must grow, and we have to act with courage, like the Lion. Welcome to our podcast. It is May 4 plus 4 minus 4 over 4, 2006. Welcome to my, weekly, but I've been having lots of other things going on weekly, but my jogcast at Weblogs, Wikis, and Feeds. Oh my. Gotta say, what a stunning experience it was to just listen to Magnitude's Everything podcast. It's been a while since I've been at Magnitude, and really love some of the reorganization that they've done there, making their more popular albums easier to access. But also, they now have a long list of podcasts that they call them, listed by genre. It's just all their, a compilation really, of their music by genre as it gets published, I suppose. I subscribe to their Everything podcast, and all that download and got copied up into my little MP3 player. Popped my earbuds in on my run here, and it came down to the Magnitude podcast. And suddenly, music from everywhere just exploded in my ears. This has been such an exciting half hour. I gotta tell you, I don't know. Don't want to sound too enthusiastic about it, but it was great because I wasn't selecting the music, and really nobody else was either. So it focused my ears to listen carefully to the sounds, to what was happening right there. So that was lovely, and the music was medieval music. There was some new age stuff thrown in here and there. A lot of medieval, really, and some world and fusion music as well. So big, wonderful, acoustic, beautiful stuff. So really appreciated those sounds from Magnitude. And again, you know, their tagline is, "We are not evil." That's an understatement. I think they're pushing it out there for us all to kind of say, you know what? This is what a record company should do. This is how music needs to be distributed. And if you aren't familiar with Magnitude, or if you think it's one kind of music, or hard to use, whatever, those are all misconceptions, and you need to go to Magnitude and really check it out, and download some stuff to your ears. I think you'll be glad you did. There's something nice about hearing music just for music. I don't even know who performed this stuff. It makes me want to go back and find out. And I will. But I think I'll throw in my podcast here kind of some of the most memorable pieces, or just one of the most memorable pieces that I just listened to give you a taste of what it's like to be running out here in New Jersey. I'm up here on Hudson Cliffs again today. running. I'm about halfway through with my 12-mile run. And, you know what? It takes a lot of courage to get this podcast out. Because so many things I thought about doing, so many things I thought about talking about. I want to check up the website, make sure I have it exactly right. Look up a word. You know, how do you pronounce that flow guy's name again? You know, things like that. And, you know what? I'm just going to talk. And I don't have my computer in front of me. And it's probably a good thing. So, but all the stuff I'm going to talk about, I will in the post link to the actual stuff to so be able to get some accuracy as well. It's just my thoughts and feelings out here on the road.
सात सुरों का ये सागर है, सातों सागर में समाया है, सात सुरों का ये सागर है,
Tata Preisu Pramavishmai.
That was track number one from the album Eastern Grooves by DJ Carey from Magnatune.com.
Yesterday, the New York City Writing Project sponsored a teacher-to-teacher conference, and I think I'll start some of my comments there. The technology side of the writing project, I think it was well represented. Susan Entheim presented some of her work that she's been doing with mapping. This semester she added Bubbler to it. Bubbler is at Pim Pam Pum. Pim Pam Pum. I don't know if it's .org or .com. /Bubbler. B-U-B-B-L-R without the E. That reference there suggests that it is a mashup with Flickr. And what Susan does basically with her students is they find a place that is meaningful to them, or they have feelings about, and they go on Google Maps, they search and they find it, and they crop a picture out from it, and then they find two other places from where they began their journey to that place one time, a specific moment at that place. And then somewhere in the middle of the journey. And they take those three Google Maps and they put them up in Bubbler. And what Bubbler allows you to do is to make a comic out of them. And so the students tell little stories about their journey to that place, and then she has them write about the place and think about it. It's a lovely mashed together of lots of different technologies, not the least of which is Google Maps, I want to mention in this. And I think, you know, I've been thinking recently about how there is a curriculum in technology that we want to bring across the curricular areas, and the use of Google Maps and Google Earth and so forth is one of those. So it's a content, really, now that we have satellite images that we can use in such a stunning variety of ways, easy ways in elementary school, through incredibly complex programming ways, up through way beyond me in terms of learning. And so there's a content there. There's a discipline that we need to bring to young people. So at any rate, Susan is doing that in this project. She's also teaching them how to use Photoshop and post images on the web, and how to make digital stories too. So it's a complex, multi-layered project that she did a great job of introducing to folks, giving them a taste of it, and then showing what her students were able to accomplish with it. You know, her students are just putting this stuff up now, so the freshness of it was very evident, and the thinking that Susan put into it with working with the students and helping them figure out what they wanted to do was also what I hope people learned, not just the techniques of how to download this stuff and upload it again as your version of a story about a place. I think a lot of that came across, and I'm pleased that that happened. And Nancy, Nanny Rolls, and Ken Stein presented as well. And presented about Flickr, how to use Flickr, how we're using it for building community, having walkabouts with the cameras, and combining this with writing and marathons that have become traditional in writing projects. So I think they also said that there was not enough time for people to play, that we needed a whole day to look at Flickr and how to use it. And it's true that Flickr has this, it's like many other Web 2.0 applications that are so useful. Bubbler is one of those, and Flickr is obviously one of those as well. And, but the point I'm trying to make about these applications is that they're immediately accessible. And, but in that immediate accessibility, so for Flickr, for example, is a place where you can collect your images online. And I think sometimes people look at that and say, yeah, so what's Web 2.0 about that? What's special? What's community building? What's, you know, what is that? It's just putting pictures online. And and I think when you go deeper and you see all the places where you can respond to each other and build groups and write on photographs and organize both your own images and around other people's ideas and their images and use tags, and Flickr has an immense amount of community building potential built right into it. So just wanted to stop there and listen to the geese flying above. You know, there's some nice things about not listening to music as well, gotta say. So there were Susan and Nancy and Ken presented in the morning in two different workshops, both having to do with images and how we, well, in one case, how we tell stories with them. In another case, how we build community and connect with each other through images. And then in the afternoon, Susan Sermonetta and I presented and in two different workshops. Susan presented her work with two blogs, FIT blogs. She's a professor at Fashion Institute of Technology at SUNY College. And this spring, she's been experimenting with having her students post to two group blogs, two classes each, actually. So about 40 students at each blog. One is nycwp.org/FIT composition. The other is nycwp.org/FIT short fiction. So I didn't see exactly what she did, but she had people go in and see the volumes of writing students have been doing on those blogs and respond to some of the work they found there. There were issues about getting people in and who could post and who couldn't post and how to change memberships and all that kind of confusing stuff at the beginning, but I think in the end she did a nice presentation showing how to use blogs in those, I think they're freshman level English classes. And I presented Writely. I'll break down my workshop here in just one second. I had people start in Microsoft Word And just do a free ride. Going back to the basics, talked about what free riding was and had people write nonstop anything that was on their minds, anything important to them at that moment. And to do that in Microsoft Word without stopping to look at the grammar or spelling, or even if it made sense a lot, but just let it go in Word. And while they were doing that, I invited them all, because Writely is still closed. Kind of curious if anybody knows out there is listening, when's Writely going to be opened? Hey, you know, we need it back open. But I was able to invite them to become members of Writely. You can do that still if you're already a member. And I invited them, and they became members, and they uploaded their Word document. Again, kind of messy to do in a workshop, but it wasn't too bad. People got their documents up, and then they were able to use their email addresses to collaborate with each other. So partners became collaborators in Writely, and then they were able to use those documents the way you can in Writely to compose on those pages simultaneously. And I don't know actually how much simultaneous composition got going, because in the end, if you have a partner, you end up having two pieces you're working on. But I think I got the point, and they saw the value of it. I think what we had them do, interestingly, was to take their partner's free write and turn it into a poem. So that genre switch of moving from expressive writing to poetic writing allowed purpose in the revision process. And we encouraged them to see, and we showed them that the original writing would still be there in the history, and that they could really do anything they wanted to, make it their own text, and then go back and see what their partner's doing to their text. And if you don't like it, you can kind of mess around with that. And so that was a great thing. And then people at the end even were able to print their work out. So all along, people were having these ahas and wow, and I could do this with kids. And so it was a very nice, accessible piece of software to show people, but also I think dramatic in terms of what it can help kids do in the classroom. I also showed the history from the beginning, the use of a template at the beginning, moving through to final product. Of one student's piece of work, and we thought about, you know, I quickly flashed through 40 versions that she worked on over a couple of weeks in creating an investigative journalism piece. So I guess I want to make the point again that it's a technology that is accessible, easy, kind of obvious. Oh, you know, I can use this just as a word processor. Then I don't have to worry anymore about where the files get saved. I don't have to concern myself with kids losing work, because Writely saves work kind of every 10 seconds, I think it is. You know, so there's that immediate, here, use it as a word processor. But then there's this introduction of collaboration that's possible. And as Michael Smith, and I'll talk about him more in a second, as Michael Smith said earlier in the day, every piece of writing you'll do after school, unless you're a creative writer, fiction writer, creative poet or something to that effect, then most every other piece will be written by collaborating with other people at various levels. I think schools really don't understand that. And the model that we need to keep in mind is that model of joint production of writing. So I was glad after he said that to be able to demonstrate that for people. And then they also noticed, somebody noticed something else he said about flows, something about immediate feedback, that kids get involved in video games because they get immediate feedback and there's appropriate challenge and all. And it's more this first point of immediate feedback that happens with Rightly, that somebody can, within seconds of you having posted your work and saved it, written it, somebody else can see it and write back to you about it. And so I think people could see the value of technology right there in front of them and how it can change writing for the better, the instruction of writing for the better. So it was nice. It was a lot of fun, actually, to introduce Rightly to these teachers who are not, some of whom are not at all tech, tech-oriented. But I think they might go and try Rightly. So I was happy about that. Kind of to sum up those workshops, I am struck again in thinking about it with how the Web 2.0, or what's available now for us to use in the classroom, has changed in two directions. One, or many, many directions actually, but two noticeable ones right here, is that the technologies are getting more accessible, easily accessible, and obvious in some ways. Familiar is another way to think about it. So that, you know, keeping your images on a gallery online and repurposing them as a story and using Google Maps and weblogs and Rightly, all these things have kind of a very nice open invitation to everybody to join in technology, in these technologies. And then at the other end of most of them is difficulty as it goes. The challenges grow, and the connections with other people grow, and the collaboration and the ways you can use these technologies gets more and more complex and more interesting the deeper you go. So we're in a good place, and it's a very exciting time to be teaching with technologies like these. I'm going to play another tune from a recent Magnatune podcast again. Magnatune podcast. Thank you.
That was track number one from the album A Celtic Celebration by Da Camera from Magnatune.com.
Before I forget it, welcome back, by the way. Before I forget, I want to mention some of the progress or directions. I don't know if it's progress. It probably is. Have been making, I have to explain that we in a second, in podcasting and webcasting and recording things in our schools. The we here is Susan Ettenheim, myself, and Chris Sloan. And, if you haven't gone to Youth Voices Coast to Coast, New York City and Utah, please go there. The URL is, I'll say this slowly, blogs.writingproject.org/blogwrite265. That's blogs.writingproject.org/blogwrite265. Just listened at the beginning of my run to three new podcasts that Chris Sloan students have put out. One really amazing one by a girl who went to a school assembly, it sounds like, and recorded a woman who is in the United States to raise money for Iraqi women's radio. And she interrupts that recording that she made with comments and ideas of her own and introductions and conclusions. Really a nice piece of radio that Chris has had one of his students put together there. And the two others were author pieces, kind of people who have come to the school to talk about their books. There's been one other like that that Chris's students have put up. So I think there are three of those now like that. And those are really interesting kind of windows into adolescent lit books for kids. Reminds me, though, of some of Susan's work as well. Susan had a woman in, a Chinese author, into her school. And she did, through World Bridges, she did a live webcast, which she did record. And I want to encourage her to get that up. I hope she put it up there, sort of alongside Chris's student's work. Now, Susan's students have been posting those bubbler map stories, digital storytelling, there on the site as well. So, hey, things are stirring up at Youth Voices Coast to Coast. And my students have come to the end of a project where they studied immigration, and they recorded those pieces of writing for the web as well. So those are up as podcasts too. If anybody's listening to Youth Voices out there besides the kids themselves, let us know. We're kind of curious to see what you think. The quality of all of this is quite variable. We're still getting used to it and developing content and technology, learning how to do it all at the same time. So any feedback beyond what we do for each other out there is really welcome. We hope this becomes a real platform for kids to get their voices out there. And hooking up with what's going on in California under the same banner of Youth Voices is a possibility that we're looking into. I think they're working with some podcasting right now, too. If you're listening to this, and you are, join up, man. Let's figure this out together. So that's exciting that that's happening in podcasting, students podcasting realm. There's a lot more to think about around webcasting, live webcasts. But one of the things we're going to be doing, hopefully this Wednesday at 9 p.m., is going live with our Skype podcast that we've been doing. We now have 10 or 11 shows, a couple I need to get up. I pulled these off weblogs, wikis, and feeds, by the way. So I need to... I'm losing some content on this RSS feed. But if you'll please move over and join this other feed at... just go, please, to teachingteachers.wordpress.com. And you'll find us. I hope that website becomes useful to a lot of people. It's not just sort of a vanity press. You know, we're moving from just learning to put things up there, kind of like in a journal, where, you know, Susan calls it vanity press. And we're moving from that to thinking about audience and who's listening and what kind of ideas and tips and format we need to be working on for people beyond just getting together and talk, Gilmore Gang type kind of thing. Although, you know, what I like most about that is the stories we tell and the fact that we're all teachers and we're teaching each other. So teachers teaching teachers.wordpress.com is where to find us. You can find us in iTunes as well and on Yahoo too. Just search for Teachers Teaching Teachers. You know, there were two other things I wanted to get to, but I think I'll do them later this week in other podcasts. I'm just thinking that they'll be more appropriate, easier to do if I have the computer in front of me. One of them is I do want to dialogue with Michael Smith. He's a writer who's worked with Jeff Wilhelm on a book called Reading Ain't Fix No Chevy. I think that's the name of it. Book about reading and boys. And they've done a lot of research around that. So he gave a quite a long lecture, and I asked him if I could record it and play some of it back on a podcast, and he said, yeah, bits and pieces I can use. So what I think I'll do is pull that together in a more formal way and respond to some of his ideas with some ideas of my own and have a little dialogue with him. Look for that on a future podcast. And there's another piece that I've been wanting to get to. We've been doing some really solid work, I think, in the wiki at schools.wikia.com. If you want to get a sense of what I'm talking about, you can go look at the Triangular Trade Gallery. Just search for those three words, Triangular Trade Gallery. We've been pulling together... copyright-free images from slavery and asking students to describe those, say how they fit into the history and what we know about those images from doing some research, and then argue for why students should, high school students should be studying this stuff, why it's an important part of their history. And they put that up as a gallery on the wiki for other students to use. One, I want to see if other students will use it. We've also been using the discussion pages for them to reflect on this experience. in interesting ways. Lots of powerful writing that they've done there in short bits and pieces of time. It's so much, it's hard for me to look at it all and to see what they've actually accomplished. And then to try to let people in the world listening to this know what we're doing. And it feels like a screencast. There's an interesting lesson at the beginning of this also in having to do with Kieran and Marie's desire to use what they called a great interactive website. That's what they wanted to find, having to do with slavery. And Kieran actually found one. And they provide students with, 40 or 50 images to choose. And basically, students do the same thing as we've done. They set up their own gallery and talk about the images there, right in that website. And it's really Web 1.0. Maybe it's 1.5, I don't know, but because it has forms on it that allow students to interact with the material. But the difference between that, we decided not to do that, and what we did with the wiki, it's really interesting. The wiki is more collaborative, more open, more public, more robust, and kind of demanding in interesting ways of students' thought than the other exercise would have been. And the product is more interesting and useful and real in the world as well. So I want to put together a quick cast, maybe a screencast, about that experience of moving from that website that looks dynamic, looks interesting for students to work in, to the wiki, and why we made the decision to do that. And then just some description of what it is, actually, that the students were able to do. Well, so, there's my introduction, and I'll get to that later. I hate making assignments for myself like this, but it's been bubbling around my head. I need to get it out. And have work to do on that, don't I? Well, you know what? I'm going to end this now. I'm coming to the bridge, the George Washington Bridge, soon here. I'm going to be playing one more tune for you. Another tune from Magnatune. Recent release at magnatune.com.org. I'll let you know which one. Oh, here you go. I'll play that for you. And my contact information is Allison, P-R, A-L-L-I-S-O-N-P-R, at gmail.com. Drop me a line. And you can also find this podcast and respond to it at my blog at weblogs, wikis, and feeds. Oh, my. The URL is nycwp.org/Paul Allison. Okay, talk to you soon. Maybe catch you on a webcast and other places as well. Okay, here's a tune from a recent release at Magnatune.
Oh, falazza heria fortuna, cum la falsa orchiata e petruna, d'ogni bene sempre digiuna, tu fai star la vita mia. O fortuna trista e amara, quando al vente mostri avara, ciascaduno ordar d'impara, col conoscer tua follia. al fundo. Talora il tristo fai giocondo, ed al goder re del mondo, che tu getti in tenebria. Sua speranza può ben far affrisca danza, questo non è fiaba né zanza, ma è il vero par senza poesia.
That was track number 11 from the album Mistral by Shira Kamen from Magnatune.com.